welcome to another episode of Source Material. I am your host, Jesse Starcher, and tonight we'll be talking about the return of Superman. I welcome back on my good friend and host of the Screaming Boy podcast, Ronnie Adams. Also joining me tonight in his second appearance on Source Material, one of the biggest Superman fans I know out there, host of the SoPro podcast, Michael K. Easton. And we're going to get right into it here. Shortly after, we had a shocking revelation from Michael K. Easton. Once again, folks, you can find our show on iTunes. You can also find it on Stitcher. We're part of the Radulichan Broadcasting Network. That's R-A-D-U-L-I-C-H. Just type that into the search box on iTunes or Stitcher. You'll be able to find us pretty easily. Rate, subscribe, comment. You can find the show at SourceMatCast on Twitter. You can find me at Stiznarki on Twitter. We'd love to hear from you. So, all right, let's get on with it. The return of Superman. Folks, we just found out that Michael K. Easton's middle name is Kal-El. Kal-El. I mean, this is a revelation to me. I've known Michael for quite a while, and I can't even believe that.
I ain't mad at him.
The SoPro podcast, which you were talking about there, you guys have done 19 episodes, so it's you're not green to this podcast game. As a matter of fact, you guys were going weekly. On top of that, I mean, you're kind of running your own graphic design business, right?
Yep, do graphic design, and I have several vendors that do all my printing. And our philosophy is, if it can be designed or printed, we can do it.
That's a good
thing. That only gets me in trouble every once in a while.
Well, it keeps you busy. I know that much. I mean,
yeah.
You've been pretty successful and pretty busy. And the name of that is
City Design and Press. Yeah, www.rcdap.com.
All right. We're going to be talking of the return of Superman. What got you into Superman? What was the lead up to where you said, you know, I'm a fan of this guy, love this guy, I'm going to change my middle name to this guy? I mean, what brought you to that point? give us a lowdown.
Well, yeah, I was always a lifelong Superman fan. Obviously, it started with the Christopher Reeves movies. It actually might have even started before that with the Superpowers show.
Oh yeah,
Super Friends.
Super Friends. But I was just a huge, like, I just grew up on all that stuff, just loving superheroes. You know, the Spider-Man and his amazing friends, and the Incredible Hulk hour. And, you know, Superman and Spider-Man were my two favorites. And I can't remember, you know, what first happened, but I just turned into, I love Superman. He has all the powers in the world to destroy it 10 times over. But all he wants to do is, you know, save the day and live a normal life. And he always has this, well, at least he's supposed to have the highest moral code of anyone, and will always do what's right, no matter how hard it is. Mm-hmm. Where, you know, a lot of other people would kind of take the easy road. But as far as actually collecting the comics, what first got me started was Nelson's Drugstore on 2nd Street in Marietta had a spinner rack, and there was Superman on the cover, and he had green kryptonite, and he had a hood over his head, and he was about to kill 3 Kryptonians, and I was like, just freaking out. I was like, what the heck's going on? And that was when DC Comics were still only 75 cents. Most of the comics had gone to a dollar by then, but being a little kid, hey, that quarter difference means a lot.
Oh, yeah.
So that's what got me hooked on the books, because they were cheaper, and then I really got into the storyline, and that was where that was heavily into John Byrne's revamp of Superman, because he was actually originally supposed to be killed off in the Crisis of Infinite Earths, and they actually killed off Supergirl instead.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, originally the Superman cells were in the toilet, and they were going to kill him off, and at the last minute, they made an editor change and decided to kill off Supergirl, and then, of course, John Byrne revamped him in the 80s and made him popular again.
Mm-hmm. You know, you're a kid, you obviously, this, now, is this the guy that gets you into comics, and this is your first read, or were you reading anything prior to Superman at all?
You know, I was getting, like, a book here or there, but the Superman was the one that, I mean, I collected Superman forever. I had boxes and boxes of Superman comics. They all tied into one another. I mean, I collected all of them. It was ridiculous how many I actually collected.
Well, they knew, back then, trust me, I was right there with you, dude, because they, on the DC side of things, you know, we talk about crossovers with Superman, Action Comics, all that stuff. I was an X-Men fan, so X-Men, X-Factor, and then you'd have all these, I'm sure you probably remember the crossover events that they had in a lot of those books, and...
Extinction.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I collected all those, too. I remember all that fun stuff.
Oh, yeah. Ronnie, we brought you on here, buddy. Superman, did you read anything back in, like, the 90s, late 80s of Superman? Or?
Of course I did.
Do you remember a specific Superman story other than the one we're going to be talking about? Anything?
Other than Death of?
Death of or Return of. Anything yeah. else? That
you... I was a here and there collector with Superman. Because, mm-hmm. like you, I was in the X titles, and then in the 90s I got into Image. Spider-Man, things like that. Superman was always good. You know what I mean? I always liked Superman, but because everybody liked Superman, mm-hmm. you know, except for just those few that just didn't like him because everybody liked him. Mm-hmm. Those are the ones. I do remember one that I read over and over, and I don't know why, but it was Superman versus Banshee, the Banshee, and it was like this woman who was like all red and or not red, but white and black, and she was mystical or had some sort of magic, so she could actually hurt him.
Hey, Michael, you're watching Supergirl, right?
Yeah, she's getting ready to appear on that.
That's what I was going to say. I thought I saw something about Banshee.
Okay, yeah. She had this axe that was magic, and it stabbed Superman, and it was like, and I remember reading that. I think Jimmy Olsen was involved. Shocker. But it was, I remember reading as a kid, and then it was a here and there thing. But, I like Superman because, I mean, you couldn't not like Superman.
Mm-hmm. Superman, I mean, was the character, obviously, that brought, in my opinion, the superhero to the mainstream. And I don't think not too many people can argue about that. We could probably thank Superman for superhero comics being where they are today. Superman's been going along for quite a while here. You know, I think it was 19. Michael, you might be able to help me out on 38.
Yeah,
1938. Dang. The iconic. It isn't one of the iconic characters of DC. This is the iconic character of DC Comics. A while back, me and Patrick Mullen of the Radlich and Broadcasting Network, we'll try that again, the Radlich and Broadcasting, Radlich and Broadcasting Network, the pugilistic pundit, Patrick Mullen, we discussed the death of Superman, all right? I just sat here and told you guys that this guy's been around since 1938, and at some point in the early 1990s, which I believe I'm looking at Wikipedia right now, it concluded in Superman Volume 2, Number 75, in 1992, Superman was killed by a murderous alien by the name of Doomsday. Since I didn't have a chance to have you boys on there when I had the discussion with Pat, well, before we get into the return, let's talk a little bit about the death of Superman. We've already kind of joked around here before I could get my recording software going. Ronnie, we'll start with you, and then we'll go to Michael, okay? All right. So, Ronnie, the death of Superman, okay? Just give me an idea of, take yourself back to when that was going on. Number one, were you aware that they were going to kill off Superman back in the 90s?
Well, yeah, it made the news.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I found out about it, I was like, I've got to get this. I mean, this is a death of an icon. This is, It's almost like the death of Captain America. It's exactly like the death of Captain America now. Mm-hmm. But you had to be a part of that history. I can't believe that a character that's been around since the 30s is going to go down. How are they going to do it? What's going to happen? And then they came out with that beautiful, beautiful black bags, blood dripping down on the Superman symbol. That whole thing, and it was just, you had to be there for it. You had to pick it up. You had to see what was going to happen, how they were going to do it, if he could ever come back, or if he was going to, and all that good stuff. So,
surely they're not going to kill Superman.
Exactly. I mean, you had to be a part of it, and you had to get it no matter what. And you knew, in your heart of hearts, if you could keep a copy, you were going to be a rich person one day.
Michael, what do you got to say about the death of Superman? Take us back. Take us back to the 90s, man.
Back then, Marietta didn't even have a comic book shop. The closest place to go for a legit comic book shop was over in Parkersburg. Mm-hmm. So the only thing that we had was spinner racks at some of the drugstores, and then People's News. That I can't remember. I think it was a neighbor or something told me that they had comics, and I was like, "What?" And I went down there and I was like, "Oh wow, they have way more than at that time that was a lot of comics to me." But they actually had shelving of comics, not just a spinner rack. So it's funny because that was anyone that's ever collected comics always knows that characters die, they come back to life. There's imaginary stories, Elseworlds, whatever. But that was the first time that it made big news. Like, everyone was on it. I remember watching interviews, like Dan Jurgens was just joking around during a summit, a DC summit, about the comics and saying, "Let's kill Superman." And they ran with it, and it became comic history. I can remember not only being part of that, but him being on, Dan Jurgens being on QVC or whatever the home shopping network was at that time. And they were just selling stuff like there was no tomorrow. I mean, it was ridiculous. It created this big hype that no one had ever seen. And this was like the first birth of, comic bubble of the 90s. And we were all there for it. I can remember People's News. Those women hated me because I would come in there. I would only have a couple of dollars, so I might spend 4 or 5 hours looking through all the comics before I actually bought one.
Awesome.
My friend Jamie Hupp, her mom worked down there, and she was one of the nice ones. She was always nice to me, and I had my list, or I had my name on a list they had for the death of Superman leading up to it, and we were all buying it.
Think about this. This is kind of like a Ronnie, think of like a, I mean, I think I've asked you before, you've never had a People's News, or you don't know of a People, never seen
no,
People's News before, right?
We had Aracoma Drug that sold a couple of them, then Town and Country, they had a small shelving of comic books that was our grocery store. Well, so I was like, you all, I had to drive to Logan, West Virginia from Chapmanville to get an actual comic book shop.
Well, Michael is sitting here, he's explaining how he created the pool list at... People's News, which is just insane. I mean, imagine going to a drugstore, Ronnie, and sitting there saying, I want this, and this comic, or, this. That's what makes it crazy is the fact that People's News was pretty much nothing but magazines, but they didn't do anything like that, did they, Michael? That wasn't anything that they normally did, right?
Well, it was all over the news. Like, you should have saw the list they had of people that had names reserved for a copy of this book.
Seriously?
Oh, it was like, and it was nuts, and that's what it came down to the day when it was actually out, and my name wasn't on the list, and that's why I mentioned...
No!
That's why I mentioned Jamie Hubb's mom, and she was like, you're in here every day. I'm going to make sure you get a copy. And thank God. Well, I mean, thank God then that she gave me that copy.
Sorry.
Dan Jurgens, like, for the finale, he did what Walt Simpson did on an issue of Thor, where each page was one panel to show the epic scope of the death of Superman in what he was going through.
Yeah.
Was People's News one of the ones that carried the polybagged, or was it just a direct...
It was a regular newsstand one. I believe the cover was like a gatefold. Like, I mean, it was longer than the normal cover. It like extended out, if I remember correctly. Mm-hmm. But it didn't have the armband or anything, because, of course, at that time, you know, I was like, how can I get me one of these? And it was just impossible.
It was, too. You know,
this is before the internet.
Yeah.
I had two suckers.
Yeah, explain, Ronnie. Explain how... So you collected them. I mean, was there just not much of a demand for this?
Were you I went to a small shop in Danville, West Virginia. Boone freaking County, West Virginia.
Boone County.
And my sister just happened to be playing in a tennis tournament or a tennis game there. Uh-huh. She was on the tennis team in high school. Yes, Chattanooga had a tennis team. While she was there, I talked my mom into it. I was like, hey, they have a comic book shop. I know they do. She goes, well, let's go look. And I was, she was very, very, my mom, credit her for getting me into the nerddom that I'm in. Mm-hmm. She's like, well, we can go take a look. You know, she does, I'm not promising anything, but we can go take a look. So I walk in and they've just got a stack of them sitting there. Oh. And I look at it. Yeah, I look at it. I'm like, it's bagged. It's sealed. I can't read this. I can't, you know.
Gotta get two.
And I was like, looked at mom. I was like, mom, I gotta get two. And she's like, why? And I said, because this could be worth money one day. And I don't want to open the one that, you know, I don't want to open it and then have it not be worth anything. And she's like, are you freaking kidding me?
Let me fund your entire college education.
Yeah. She's like, all right, whatever. Here, you pay for one and I'll pay for one. And I said, perfect. That's great. So I bought one and immediately opened it out in the car to read it.
When you... Okay. Let me ask you, Ronnie. Is this the first time... Is this the first time that you looked at a comic and said, okay, I need to buy two copies of it because it's going to be worth something at some point?
Yes. Yeah, okay. Well, the first time I really looked at one, you know, I bagged and boarded my comics and you know, took care of them.
90s?
And all that.
In the 90s you were doing
that? Yeah, dude.
Wow, man. You were a little bit more advanced than I was back in the
Yeah, I was. I didn't. Now, trust me, I didn't bag and board them all.
Yeah.
But I just, the number ones, the you know, things like that, I took care of.
Okay.
And
but this is the first one you ever really kind of looked at and said, I've got to get two copies of this thing because one of them's going to be worth money. Were you collecting, did you collect any other books in order to try, were you aware of key issues back then and
no.
what stuff would be worth at all?
Okay. Yeah, no, I was just like, I was just reading the story, you know, and I didn't say, well, I've got to get this. I was, you know, getting what I could afford at the time.
How about you, Michael? Were you aware of the, what's the word I'm looking for? I want to say collectability, but that's not it. Yeah, I guess. Is that the word for it? What is the word for what is the word for the people that,
speculators.
Thank you. Yes. Were you in any way a speculator prior to this, or did this make you a speculator?
The speculating did come on till later on when I was a little bit older and these guys got together and started this company called Image, but up to that point, I was just getting what Ronnie is saying, what I could afford, which was usually the Superman titles, and I would be able to get a title here or there.
Yeah.
Gotcha. All right, well.
I mean, we all pretty much had that one book that we would go, you know, hell and high water to get.
The one specific memory that I have in regards to this black bag Superman, I knew about all the hype, everything that was going on around this, you know, the end of, you know, Superman's going to die. And I remember hearing about the black polybagged issue. I did not go out and get it. I didn't go out and get the newsstand either. I don't think I actually bought a copy of The Death of, because I was thinking that I was never going to find it. Back in the early 90s, it was just like Michael's talking about here. It was tough to go and find a place that sold comics. People's News was one of the places that I knew sold, but I didn't have an in like Michael did, apparently. Right. I would go down there and look at the shelf, and that was about it. But driving the old lady's nuts down there, I'm right there with you, Michael. I can remember actually getting kicked out shortly before closing time because I was taking too long to find a game to rent. I was just wanting to rent a Nintendo game, for Pete's sake. But anyway, I can remember going to the mall in Parkersburg, and I remember specifically seeing, I think it was in a kiosk. They didn't have a comic store in the mall, as far as I'm pretty sure. I think they might have had a bookstore, but I swear I remember seeing a kiosk that had the it had the polybagged Superman. And I wish I had some clue as to what this kiosk was. It's not like I got to the mall very often back then anyway. I was at the whim of my parents if we were going to the mall. So, but I can remember specifically.
And that was back then. That was when the Williamstown Bridge was down, so you had to go the long way.
So you you wasn't going to the mall unless it was pretty necessary. And the fact that my parents would try and it was just going to be me and my sister, we're 10 years apart. You know, I don't know if I could even attempt to go to the mall with two of my kids, let alone three. So, you know, I'm sure it was probably something was very necessary in order for us to go there. But I remember that thing having a price tag on it of $75.
Dang.
Yeah. So clearly getting your hands on it and reselling it was something that sparked a lot of people's interest into trying to get these issues. So that's our stories about the death of Superman. So let's get into what we've come here to talk about tonight. We are talking about the return of Superman.
There's one thing I wanted to point out is after the death of Superman, before there was the return, there was a funeral for a friend.
Yeah.
That went through all the Superman books, and it had not, like, Superman was dead, so it was like a big deal because this was like the first time ever Superman wasn't in his books. He had passed away, and it was showing, I think it was like an 8-part story showing, you know, how everyone was dealing and how, you know, Superman was such an effect on their lives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the fact that this mainstay of comic books is now gone. There was a little bit of time in between where they told the story and let our DC superheroes grieve, showing what it was like for these people to try and go on without our Superman is now gone.
Yeah, like in the comic book world, if you put it on realistic terms, it was like that was their JFK when he was died. That's the way how deeply they were affected by it.
And I can tell you that I don't think I've read maybe – you said it was an 8-part series?
I think it was 8, but, you know, this is going back to – back then, so I could be off on my numbers there.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm looking
at... It was 8, maybe.
I'm looking at the wiki here, and it doesn't say how many issues were in it, but it does say that all Superman comic titles went on a 3-month hiatus. So, I assume they stopped at... Go ahead.
That would have made it 12 then, because I think there was 4 Superman titles out at that time.
Okay. So all the Superman titles go on a 3-month hiatus. You know, it's talking about – it's pretty much a series about how they're trying to deal with the fact that Clark Kent and Superman are both gone. After that come the reign of the Supermen. And what in the world is going on?
I had the poster on the wall that was like, who is the real Superman?
Yes.
June of 1993. So that is...
Well, and that's where they had the 4 Superman titles. They were smart that one came out every week. So, you know, every week you would have a new Superman title.
And we have are these the die-cut covers?
Yeah.
Where, because I'm looking at the Superman the Man of Steel 22, it's got the S symbol on the front, you know what I'm talking about. The S symbol that's on on Superman's chest. Anyway, but it's all steel.
Yeah.
So, and then I don't have the covers for the rest of them here. I wish I did. But anyway, we're talking.
They all had that S shown on the version that their books were in.
That's right. That's right. In 1992, Superman dies. Now all of a sudden, we've got in June of 1993, the summer The summer of 1993, the reign of Superman start. Less than a year later. So we're trying to figure out, just like it was said there, there's four Supermen. And we find out in this particular story that we have, I'm just going to go ahead and list them down here. Okay. We got John Henry Irons. Irons. John Henry
Played by
Irons.
Shaquille O'Neal.
Yes. We're going to talk about that.
Oh, no.
We must.
Not, no.
Yes. We must. That is going to be talked about. John Henry Irons as Steel. Then we have the Eradicator. Superboy. Don't call him Superboy.
Yeah.
And Cyborg Superman. Okay. All of them bearing some semblance and sometimes even claiming the mantle, claiming the name of Superman. You know, and when this all happens in the month of June, readers are going wild. Who in the world is the real Superman? Who is it? So let's talk about each one of them here real quick. Steel is John Henry Irons. I don't know if he's had an appearance prior to Superman 22, Superman, the Man of Steel 22, but he is.
Correct.
What's that?
There was an issue. If I'm correct, there's an issue where he is saved by Superman.
He talks about it in his origin story for sure, because he does mention that in the graphic novel that I was reading. He talks about how he was saved by Superman. Now, I didn't know if that happened in any previous issue or not, or if that was just made up for the origin story. But anyway, he is a steelworker, which we find out he also, I think, was a government man at one point, a weapons developer. I believe.
Toasters.
What's that?
Toasters.
The Toastmasters. Yes, the Toastmasters. That is the goofiest name of a gun, okay? I've never heard. There's no way that some criminal on the street is going to say, "Hand me the Toastmaster. I'm about to shoot me a fool." That is just.
I like mine extra dark.
I mean, Toastmasters. Okay. Now, let me put this in perspective for our listeners here and kind of explain what's going on. John Henry Irons was a government man at one time, weapons developer. It kind of put me in the mind of Tony Stark, you know, developing weapons. And he creates these guns, and he calls them the BG-80s, okay? Which, you know, I don't know why BG.
Gun.
Yeah, well, of course. That's the first thing I want to go with. But
was the 88th version.
Apparently so. It took him 80 guns to, you know, 80 times to figure it out. But he creates these guns, and it turns out they've gone on the black market, and now all of a sudden, you know, these street thugs around his home have got these guns that he developed. Of course, the slang term for these guns on the street is the real, you know, imposing or really really scary term, Toastmaster. You know, if somebody's got a Toastmaster, it's about to go down. So that's kind of where we start off with Steel. That's kind of our introduction. Just like Michael was saying, at one point in his life, he was saved by Superman. There was a building that collapsed during the fight between Superman and Doomsday. John was stuck, fell in, I think he was trapped, or a building collapsed on him, okay? But he was okay, all right? He gets out, and in the spirit of Superman, I think that's mentioned, Superman has passed away, so he feels that he needs to continue on the legacy of Superman, builds himself this iron armor, I assume, or some, no, excuse me, steel armor.
wasn't there something to do with Superman's cape? Like he actually had Superman's cape or something.
I do not remember. Forgive us if there's a few details that we leave out. We're just going to hit the main beats. But anyway, yeah, he dons this steel armor, all nice and shiny. And I think he creates these weapons.
He created.
He has
wristbands that fired.
Go for it. I want to hear it.
Railroad spikes.
Yes. Hey.
A hammer. I'm done.
John Henry Irons.
Well, yeah.
I mean, there's a point where you get to see him use his fancy weapons, but, and he has, oh, we forgot about the hammer. Yeah.
Yeah.
The hammer. This humongous hammer.
It's a sledgehammer.
My wife just sent me a message. It says, stop fucking screaming. All right, well, I guess I'll have to tone it down.
Wow.
John Henry Irons gets me going. I get all passionate. But
it's his railroad ties.
Yeah, it must be. It must be. But anyway, he has the huge hammer, and he has this I assume the armor and stuff is I don't think it's just straight up steel. But anyway, he's a pretty powerful dude. The first story that we see that he's involved in is he's got to go try and track down who's giving the Toastmasters out to all the little thug kids that are doing drive-bys in his neighborhood.
I just think of banks when you open up an account, they give you a toaster.
They give you
free Toastmaster 80 whatever with new account.
I think that was the plot of the Still movie.
All right, let's go ahead and talk about it, okay? Before we even go on to the next three Supermen.
It sucked.
I've never watched it, okay?
Oh my gosh.
I want to know Michael K. Easton. Michael K. Easton, you got to be honest with me here. When you found out that Steel was actually going to be a movie, were you excited?
Well, here's the thing. Back then, after, you know, of course, the Superman movies, the fourth Superman film flopped. So
no.
You didn't get...
What are you? Now, wait a second. You're telling me a lie. The fourth Superman movie sucked. Now, if I remember correctly, Superman got some new powers in that movie.
I didn't say it sucked. I said it flopped.
It flopped. Okay, my bad.
Yeah.
I misunderstood.
So, yeah, no. I love all superhero movies. But no, so after that, you know, there was nothing out there. So anytime that you would hear a tidbit of a comic book movie being made, I mean, there was Dolph Lundgren's The Punisher. And,
you know, he's got a point. He has a very big point right there. I was excited about Dolph Lundgren's Punisher.
I was too.
And then there was the cheesy Captain America movie made that he had rubber ears in.
See, I haven't seen that one. Have not.
Yeah,
I've heard about it,
fun.
But never seen it.
But at that point, when all this is going on, the only thing out there that we would see on TV related to superheroes was they would have the Incredible Hulk specials.
Yeah.
So,
I was excited.
Yeah. So,
Daredevil.
Yeah, I was
Thor.
Like.
I remember Daredevil and Thor being in some episodes or some shows.
Yep.
I remember
I'm pretty
those.
Sure that version of Thor just carried around a claw hammer. We're at He-Man brown fur.
So bad.
And the black Daredevil costume.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, still, you know, it, Shaquille O'Neal was also a huge Superman fan. So, you know, of course, that was at the height of his popularity. So they didn't let it as his project. But rule number one, Still was inspired by Superman. Therefore, they make no reference to Superman in this movie.
No.
Like, there is no reference at all.
Oh, wow.
And it also has the villain in it is like one of the guys from the Breakfast
Judd Nelson.
Judd. Yeah. Yeah.
How could you go wrong with Judd Nelson?
Oh, my gosh. That's crazy.
I tell you, I could go wrong with Judd Nelson. You put him in the movie.
Yeah.
At that point.
And not only that, but they dumb his powers down. Like, he doesn't have, he does have the hammer in it, but he can't fly with it or anything. And
well, he sort of flew. Didn't he have jetpacks in his boots, but it only, he hovered?
Yeah, maybe for a couple seconds or something.
Yeah. I know he had, rollerblades in him or something, too.
Okay.
Now, did this...
I can't remember.
Was this released in theaters?
Yeah.
It was?
Yeah.
It wasn't direct-to-video or anything, was it?
No.
Wow.
They thought this was going to be a big hit.
You forget, he was also a genie in whatever that...
Kazam.
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah.
Now, listen...
Why are we bringing that up?
You're talking to one of the biggest... Okay, back then, I kind of knew about the Steel movie. I still haven't ever seen it, but, you know, I was a huge Shaquille O'Neal fan. Maybe two
the rap
of his,
album.
I had two of his tapes, Michael K. Easton. I'd sit there and I would play basketball listening to that, you know, in my car. So I'd have the car door open. The
you
tape
played
cassette.
Shaq Fu, didn't you?
I played Shaq Fu. I don't own it, but I played it. So
you rented it.
Parmar, right down the hill in Slaughterhouse Hill. Yep, Parmar had video rentals. But, okay, and video games, yes. So we kind of talked about Steel. Let's talk about the Eradicator a little bit. The Eradicator.
Well, it's fun. Like leading up to these guys, DC was making all this big hype on who is the real Superman.
Yeah, you know what? You're right. Because I'm calling him the Eradicator right off the bat. That kind of spoils the surprise. Look like Superman, just a little bit different. And you want to, Michael? I didn't mean to interrupt you, man. But
well, it was just funny. Like leading up to it, you know, everyone's like trying to figure out what's going on and who's the real Superman. And right off the bat, it's very obvious that some of these guys are not Superman. You know, obviously, Steel wasn't Superman.
No.
But Eradicator, he like kind of reminded you of like if the Punisher was Superman.
Yeah.
A little bit more hardcore, and you're like, well, you know, if I was dead, I might come back a little pissed too.
Death changes a man. You never know.
Yeah, I mean, he shows up and he's like offing people immediately, and he's got these weird powers coming from his hands. Yeah, death changing a man. If you're going into this and you're not knowing which Superman is, you know, who's the real Superman, he's got these things that are coming from his hands, and he's wearing these cool goggles that my grandpa would probably wear, you know, so he could see at night.
Oh, that's awesome.
And
then blue blockers on, man.
That's right. But he's taking care of criminals with no compunction. As a matter of fact, I mean, he's got like, you know, he's got little tolerance for just about anybody's shit.
And if I remember correctly, wasn't his, like, he was the one that had the base, like, he was going to the Fortress of Solitude.
Yes.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And
so that would make you think that, hey, this might be Superman.
This might be the guy. This might be the guy. And then we have our introduction to Superboy, but don't call him Superboy. This is a very young version of Superman. He comes out, apparently he was broken out by the Newsboy Legion. I believe that's how we were introduced to him. He's broken out of what they call, I think, Project Cadmus. I could be wrong on that. Okay.
What was nice about Superboy was back in the 80s, DC had done their first reboot of the universe, which they do every 5 years now. But back then, this was a really big deal. And one of the things that they changed mainly about Superman was they went back to more of the Golden Age continuity where he didn't become Superman until he was an adult. So in the Silver Age, all the Superboy stories never happened.
Ooh.
So in this universe, this was our first introduction to a Superboy. So that was what was cool. It's like, oh, we got our version of Superboy, and he's modern, and he's got the fade on the haircut, he's got an earring, and he's got attitude with a leather jacket. So, mm-hmm. You know, to us,
he's one of us.
It's like, well, yeah. Wow. And it was also drawn by Tom Grummett, who was, at the time, like, the best Teen Titans artist. And he did a really good job on that series, too.
Yeah. The fact that, I didn't know the fact that this was the first time Superboy actually showed up after Crisis. You say it was after Crisis, right?
Yeah. There was one time where a Superboy from a pocket universe... It's a little convoluted with the Legion of Superheroes, but in that continuity, there was no such thing as Superboy. And what was later, what's really funny about Superboy back then was he found out that he was a clone of Superman, but he only had 50% Kryptonian DNA because they couldn't decipher it all. He finds out later on that, you know, one of the scientists down there provided the other DNA. And then later in the last 10-15 years, they retconned it where the actual other 50% of the DNA came from Lex Luthor.
Oh, wow. Well, yeah, you know, some of the differences, you already kind of hit on some of the main stuff. There's also one big crazy difference that gets sussed out during this whole storyline where he has, like, manipulation powers over metal, I believe. It's like
tactile telekinesis.
There you go. So he could touch things and... I think there's a point in the book where he touches a I think he's captured. He ends up, you know, easily breaking free because I think his, you know, what he was encased in or what his hands were encased in was some type of metal. So he was able to get right out of it. And there's a couple of parts in that. So you know, right there again, here is this going to be the new Superman? And there's changes that are definitely happening with this guy. Fourth and final Superman, and that is what affectionately is known as the Cyborg Superman.
Hank Henshaw.
Yes, sir.
This guy is Superman, except for the fact that he has, you know, a Terminator, half a Terminator face, and Cyborg. He's half Cyborg.
If I remember correctly, he tells Lois that, you know, he was damaged so much from the fight with Doomsday that they had to replace, you know, part of his body with actual, you know, cyborg parts or Kryptonian, whatever.
Gotcha. And you're right. I think I remember that conversation. So here's this guy that comes out, I mean, looking more machine than man, but he is claiming the mantle of Superman. He told Lois, yeah, I am Superman. It's me. This is what's happened. And it goes so far in the book as to where he gets in touch with the White House. And we're talking President Bill Clinton.
Oh, dang.
President Bill Clinton, Ronnie. They did a DNA test on this guy. Lo and behold, everything matches. This is Superman.
What? They can't decipher the Kryptonian DNA to clone him, but they can match it up to someone else's?
Hey, I didn't write the book.
Listen, dude. Don't look too much into it.
One point, though, is in all these books, you know, at this point in the Superman universe, Lois Lane knew that Clark Kent was Superman. Mm-hmm. So in all these books, she's trying to figure this out, like, do they know who I am? And all these guys really know is that, you know, Superman obviously has a close relationship with Lois. Mm-hmm. And in the various books, they do make kind of references where it second guesses you and like, oh, well, maybe they do know. Like, Superboy, like, does this little thing with his hair and acts like he's Clark Kent, and it makes her go, huh, there's no possible way this kid is Superman, but that makes me wonder. And so I think they were all doing nods in all the books saying, hey, Lois, it's me.
Mm-hmm. And if anybody's going to know who Superman is, it's going to be Lois Lane. So the readers are going to be looking to her for the answer, most likely. I mean, the readers are going to have their ideas of who it could be. But, you know, according to the comic, the one person that's going to know Clark Kent slash Superman the best would be Lois Lane. Ronnie, I don't know if I asked you this, but were you – I know you said you collected In and Out. Did you collect any of this story at all?
Yeah.
Okay.
I got all, you know, pretty much all of it.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Very impressive.
Well.
you sound like you're not too impressed yourself.
Well,
but...
don't get me wrong. I'm a comic book fan through and through, and I do love it, and I love just about everything, you know, with comic books. But this, it got a little... I'll be honest with you, it got old after a while.
It got old?
Yeah, because I'm just like, just show the real one, because he's supposed to be coming back. None of these guys are really super. Mm-hmm. And
so you know at this point in time, or I should say, you knew when you were reading that none of these guys were Superman. You didn't have a bet on which one was? Or you didn't
No, think? No, I knew that none of them were.
Okay, all right. How about you, Mr. Easton? Did you have your bets hedged on one of them, or did you have one that you were like, oh man, that's got to be him? It'd be so cool if that was him.
Well, it was funny because like the mass media surrounding it always acted like it was a big secret of, you know, which one of these guys, and it was really quick. Like, you figured out that, you know, none of these guys are Superman. And I think even in the first one or two issues of the Cyborg Superman, there's obviously something off going on. It's more like you're trying to figure out, well, where did these people all come from?
Mm-hmm.
And is any of these guys the Superman?
Okay.
And where is Superman?
Yeah.
Did you have a favorite, Michael? Was there a favorite one of these guys out of these four guys that we just talked about? We'll say, which one is your favorite out of the four?
I probably at that time enjoyed Superboy the most because I, you know, again, it was around my age group. I think I was probably 14 or 15 around that time, so it was obviously that, you know, I was going to follow him. I didn't really like the Eradicator version of Superman. Usually I would navigate to the art style that I liked the better.
Okay.
I really enjoyed the Superman art, and even though that I like the Dan Jurgens Superman, I just found that Superman kind of off-putting. I mean, of course, I still got and read it, and it was the same thing with Eradicator. I'm kind of one of those true blue Superman fans that, you know, this is Superman, and this is how he should act. And it's obvious that some of these guys aren't acting that way. Now, I did also enjoy Still, because he was more of like a legacy-type character trying to live up to the legend. Mm-hmm. I did enjoy his story as it progressed, so I would say out of the four, it was probably Superboy, then Still.
Okay. How about you, Ron? Did you have a favorite?
I like the Superboy, the concept behind Superboy.
Let me just go ahead and step right in here and say that he said the word fresh three times in the book, and that was
the 90s, man.
And that was me skimming over it when I noticed it, so I don't really know how many times he actually said it. I just want to say fresh.
He was cool.
There's no way you were using that word in high school or in middle school. Whatever.
I use it now.
No, whatever. Give me a break. Oh, jeez. Anyway, so go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Oh, no, you're fine. I like the Superboy kind of just because of the attitude and how fresh he was.
Oh, jeez. Jeez.
Funky Fly.
Funky Fly. Even though I knew it wasn't him, I really liked the Eradicator because he did the stuff that, you know, he wasn't supposed to do.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, just because it had that. The only reason I liked him because I knew he wasn't Superman. Mm-hmm. And but I liked the fact that, like I said, he killed. And that sounds really, really morbid, but Superman doesn't kill. And so you kind of knew that it wasn't him, or at least I did. It was a different character. He had, you know, all these powers, and he had the cool goggles and all that stuff, you know, or the glasses. It was a different take on a classic character. I did not like Steel, just because I thought he was kind of silly. That's just me, but it was nice to see him trying to live up to the legacy. Mm-hmm. Just like Michael said, it was also, I don't know. It was just kind of like you built armor to be Superman. I don't know. It was weird to me.
Well, Ronnie, you know who my favorite image character, or at least, well, I'd say he is my favorite image character of all time is, and that is Supreme.
Yeah.
So I'm very partial to the Eradicator. I'll just put it that way. You know, I'm the same way. I'm that anti-hero 90s guy that wants to see somebody with Superman's powers take out the bad guys without even thinking twice, which that was pretty cool to see. Now, I want to tell you guys, I mean, I know I told you guys that I'd first read this story about four years ago. I honestly can remember this story, being a very big part, but I had no idea, you know, when I was going into reading this back in 2012 as to what the actual result was. So I honestly thought that one of these four guys, when I was reading the story, could have been Superman. I thought, well, somehow Superboy's going to turn into Superman. So I was going into this with a very fresh, fresh. It was fresh. Thanks a lot, Superboy. Appreciate
you. You're Funky Fly fresh.
I was going into this not knowing what was going on. So I can honestly say that not knowing the result of this story, I honestly thought that one of these four guys was going to be Superman. But anyway, let's get into Act 2. We'll get into Act 2 here because I know we're running long and I don't want to keep you guys too late. Our first act is pretty much just us getting to know each of the Supermen, kind of finding out is he or is he not the actual Superman? Is any of these guys Superman? What's Lois Lane's kind of take on things? We got Lex Luthor, which this is Lex Luthor. Is it Alexander Luthor? Lex Luthor Jr.? Who's the red-haired guy? Who's the red-haired bushy guy?
That one I'm confused on.
Yeah, here's what happened. This is so bad. So
educated
when I first started collecting comics, when I was talking about Superman killing three Kryptonians, what happened was he went to a parallel universe where there was a Supergirl that the humans created to battle these three Kryptonian villains. that had decimated that Earth. And at the end of the storyline, they had left the that Earth like completely destroyed. Like Supergirl was the last inhabitant of that Earth. And he took her over to the regular DC universe, and she had to mend and get better, and there was a whole storyline with her being called the Matrix. Well, eventually she assumes the Supergirl identity. She starts dating Lex Luthor, or Alexander Luthor II. Mm-hmm. And the storyline behind that is Lex Luthor got cancer from the kryptonite ring he used to wear.
Okay.
When he was bigger and larger and had a hard on to kill Superman. Mm-hmm. So what ends up happening is he dies as well. All of a sudden you find this son of his, which I think he was Australian or something. And he assumes the mantle of the new Lex Luthor. Come to find out, it is Lex Luthor that had a clone of himself created and transported his brain into the clone.
What?
Yeah.
All right.
And see, this is why Supergirl is never seen during the battle leading up to the death of Superman, because this Lex that she's dating, she believes him, and she stays by his side.
So, you know, that's kind of act one. Here's our four Supermen. Kind of make up your mind. Now, I mentioned about President Bill Clinton. He gave a stamp of approval. They pretty much accepted Cyborg Superman as the actual Superman. So, as far as the United States is concerned, Cyborg Superman is the real deal Holyfield, okay? He is the guy that we're going to look at, and we're looking to as Superman from here on out. Act 2. Holy crap, a big spaceship shows up, okay? Big spaceship shows up, and it just hovers over Coast City. Now, for those of you that are kind of new to the comic book game out there in podcast land, Coast City, and you guys correct me if I'm wrong here, but I'm fairly certain Coast City is the home of one Hal Jordan Green Lantern.
Mm-hmm.
Coast City, folks, if you want to look at a map, I believe Coast City would be the fictional city of Coast City. Is located in California. I don't know if there's a real Coast City or not, but the way they have it is it's in California. Obviously on the coast.
It's near a coast, I assume.
You could probably put money on that.
I mean, oddly enough, it was landlocked. We don't know why.
Just out there in the middle of Nebraska.
Coast City, Nebraska.
Oh, shoot. So anyway, this big spaceship shows up. What the heck's going on? All of a sudden, this thing drops out all these 77,000 bombs all across Coast City. And I think it's within a matter of pages. Coast City is destroyed. Now, where's Green Lantern? Green Lantern's out doing Green Lantern things in Sector 953 on his way back to Earth. Okay, Hal Jordan is on
his way. Now, it's one thing to point out, though, is this is the Hal Jordan that has the white wingtips in his hair.
The white wingtips. Was something going on that's causing this prior to this story? Was there anything?
They were just... Up to that point, they were just saying that he had been around a lot longer than, you know, Superman, or, you know, when they redid their different stories, the Wally West Flash was taking over the mantle from the original Flash, and so it was just portraying that, you know, Green Lantern was a lot older these days than, you know, previously.
Okay.
And then, of course, later on, we find out what those white tips really mean.
Okay. Well, let's get back to that, because I have a feeling that's going to tie into what we talk about here in a few. So, okay, Coast City is destroyed. And what we find out is this spaceship is being piloted by none other than one yellow bastard. That yellow bastard. Wrong story. None other than Mongol. And
yeah,
this guy has, we just, the last Superman book that we did actually featured Mongol, which was Superman, for the Man Who Has Everything. This guy's a real turd. That's probably the best way to put it.
He's a poop head.
He is a big poop head. And not only that.
Which,
go ahead.
The story that you're referencing is in the old continuity.
Mm-hmm.
Like, in this continuity, this is because after the events of that parallel universe that got decimated, Superman goes out into space and is going on this journey of figuring out who he is, and he ends up on this war world which is run by Mongol, and he's like the leader of it, and he ends up, Superman ends up defeating him, disgraces him, so this is him coming to Earth for payback.
Yeah, it's revenge time. Mongol's back with payback, and not only is he he's not acting alone, all right? We find out that our cyborg Superman is not exactly on the side of Earth after all. As a matter of fact, he is, I wouldn't even almost say teamed up with Mongol, more along the lines of, like, he's got Mongol kind of under his thrall, where he's kind of calling the shots. And
he's kind of acting like a douchebag.
I really don't think there's any kind of about it. He definitely is. But yeah, these guys tag teamed and blew up Coast City. Superboy flew there with Cyborg Superman to try and check this whole spaceship thing out, and then of course Eradicator shows up. Well,
which that was, like, to me anyway, it was like a holy shit moment where you're like, I mean, they blew this town up.
Mm-hmm. And Coast City had been around. I mean, it's been a staple in DC Comics for I don't know how long, and all of a sudden it's just gone. Like I said, I don't even know if it was a matter of pages or a matter of panels. It was just like, there it is, and boom, it's done for. Kaboom. The whole thing is just destroyed. There's nothing but a crater left. We find out that Mongol's purpose is to create a new war world on Earth. Like I said, Superboy was taken captive. He gets out of there, goes and recruits Steel. Eradicator showed up, and he was one of the first ones to find out that Cyborg Superman was a bad guy, because he proceeds to get blown away and turns into energy form and heads back to the Fortress of Solitude. So we're still kind of we're hoping to goodness that, you know, the Cyborg Superman's not Superman. We know Steel's not. Superboy, you know, the jury's still out, and Eradicator almost has the strongest bet or the strongest horse in this race to be Superman. Because he's heading back to the Fortress of Solitude and all that stuff. During all this that's going on, Eradicator, I think, makes his way back to the Fortress of Solitude and notices that one of the, what are they called, war suits, the Kryptonian war robots or something, is gone. What happened? Where in the world did it go? And we forgot to mention about how at the beginning of this book, Superman's body was stolen. I believe we find out that it was stolen by the Eradicator. His coffin's empty. And this guy, is that right?
I was trying to remember that, because I think, like there was a couple people that were going to steal his body, if I remember correctly, and I think Lex was one of them. Mm-hmm. And then they come to find out that his body's missing. Where is it?
Yeah. So Eradicator makes his way back to the Fortress of Solitude, and he notices one of these big Kryptonian war machines are missing. It's a humongous robot.
Mm-hmm.
We find out that this thing's making its way across the ocean. It makes its way all the way up to Metropolis. It gets into a fight with Steel. It's going back and forth. I can't remember if Superboy's there. I think Superboy's there at the same time. Steel hits it with this big old hammer, and it powers down, okay? From the crotch of this war machine, a bunch of liquid starts to rush out, and oh my gosh.
Rebirth.
It is. It was nothing but rebirth that just plops out. Here is this gorgeous black mullet, a black-suited, silver-emblemed Superman. Now there's five. Is this the real Superman? Holy moly. Yes, it is. Superman.
Superman is back in black.
Superman's back, okay? Enter Act 3. So we get into Act 3, all right? So let me just go ahead and we'll talk about Act 2 here real quick. Got a few questions, and then we'll hit Act 3, and then we'll get on out of here. Well, I already asked you guys if either one of you believed one of these Superman was a real deal. Did the cyborg Superman turning, him being a good guy, then all of a sudden a villain? I mean, did that surprise you, Ronnie? Was that something that you were?
No, he's a cyborg.
Okay. How about you, Michael? Was this something that took you by surprise?
No, because I can't remember what I was reading at the time, but it was quickly pointed out that he was a villain and he was a red herring or whatever.
Okay.
To this day, they have never come up with a better name for him other than Cyborg Superman.
It's just, you're right, it's a weird name. After we found out that he is a villain, and we get the backstory explained about Hank Henshaw, his tragic story about how he was part of, like, DC's Fantastic Four, which was...
Yeah, and that was just like a joke. Like, they were, when they first did that storyline, it was, you know, Marvel and DC would always play these jokes on each other of having their characters kind of cross over but not cross over at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And that was John Byrne just playing around saying, you know, here's Fantastic Four in a Superman book.
Hmm. These guys get hit by cosmic radiation, they come back down to Earth, and, well, you know, they don't exactly live. They all die, pretty much. We find out that Hank Henshaw was one of those astronauts who died, rebuilt his body, and the whole DNA matching thing, I think.
In this Superman continuity, the Kryptonians did not have sex to have kids. They actually had their DNA mixed together, and it was all done scientifically, and these birthing matrices would produce their offspring.
Did this supposedly travel along with Kal-El as he came to Earth?
Yeah, in this continuity, it was saying that he wasn't actually conceived until he landed on Earth. He was being developed or whatnot.
Oh, really? This,
yeah, so he was... In an Armageddon storyline, Superman runs for president, and this is the storyline that they use that, you know, he was a U.S. citizen because he wasn't actually born until he, you know, entered Earth's atmosphere or whatever.
They had to explain why...
My nose is bleeding.
I love how they have, you know, he runs for president and we have a whole birth certificate issue. Sounds awful familiar. Yeah.
Where did that come from?
Anyway, Hank Henshaw, tragic story, but now he blames Superman for something. Hence the turn on Superman. Hence him being a villain. So,
like Dr. Doom.
Yeah, indeed.
Richards.
So, talking about Act 3, Superman has now joined the fight, okay? We got Superboy, Steel, Eradicator's still licking his wounds, but he's getting better. He's kind of growing some hair back. He doesn't look as healthy, you know. He just got his face blown off, but he's still alive. And Green Lantern makes, you know, I talked about Green Lantern. Green Lantern makes his way back to Earth and finds out that Coast City has been destroyed. And, oh my gosh, let me just tell you folks right now, okay? Business picks up when Green Lantern enters the fray. Okay, there's been some cool fights, some fun interaction throughout this whole series of books. But when Green Lantern gets in here and mixes it up with Mongol, I really enjoyed that whole confrontation that they had. Let me ask you, Michael, you probably remember this. Green Lantern just showing up in the middle of these books. What'd you think?
Oh, I was totally into it because I was a huge Green Lantern fan too, because a lot of these books, like the history of them, I would like go up to Rinky Dinks and I could find a lot of these older issues. So I would be able to pick up a lot of the old Green Lantern issues. So I would familiarize myself with a lot of the history. Green Lantern was one of those guys that I really got into, and just seeing him like enter the fray and knowing that, you know, all his family is here in Coast City and they're just been wiped out, that you knew stuff was going to hit the fan.
Oh yeah. I mean, there's points in the book, you know, throughout the comic where he's fighting Mongol and they're going back and forth. And in Green Lantern, I think at one point he's down, but he ain't out. And he gets back up and he, like, covers himself in, like, knight armor from his ring. And it just looked freaking awesome. Let's talk about Coast City and the ramifications and, the white wingtips in his hair, the ramifications that this has.
One thing that Hal Jordan has in common with a Marvel character is he's the man who has no fear. He is fearless. and he has, the other thing being, he has great willpower. This totally just drives him insane. Hal was always the guy that would, he answered to the Guardians of Oa, and he was the guy that would always question their thinking. And this just totally drove him over the edge, where he goes nuts, becomes this evil entity villain called Parallax. Hopefully I'm saying that right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The long version of the story, you don't find this out until very long afterwards, because a lot of this gets retconned back into the series. Those white tips were showing that he knew fear. And what had happened was the entity of Parallax is pure fear. And he, at that time, saw an opening when Hal was just completely devastated by it and consumed him, and he became Parallax. And that's what led into Zero Hour, which was the second time DC decided to rebirth their universe. And that whole storyline was about Hal trying to restart the Earth and have another crisis where Coast City was not destroyed.
Mm-hmm. Very large ramifications. I think out of the return of Superman, other than the fact that we get Superman back, clearly, we've already kind of talked about that. But I think this right here is the lasting, one of the biggest, you know, events that occur in this whole thing, that it spawns this whole Parallax, it spawns the whole Zero Hour. You know, I mean, Hal goes insane, and in this... Isn't that the story where when he becomes Parallax, he like freaking breaks Sinestro's neck?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, and he like kills all the Owens. And absorbs the power battery.
That is one definitely. Go ahead, Ronnie.
Oh, and then there's the epic picture of him with all the rings on his finger, you know, on one hand. So
yeah,
and he also killed Kilowog, which was like one of his best friends.
Oh, up to that goodness.
Point. Yep.
Zero Hour also ties into a character called Extant, I think was the way he was called. Mm-hmm. And Zero Hour, and that had to do with a previous miniseries that was called Armageddon, and that was what I was referencing with the Superman and the birthing matrix.
You talking about Armageddon 2001?
Oh, yeah. That was one of my favorite series.
Oh, buddy. Well, I think... I kid you not, on the source material ideas, it's sitting over there. I've got a Armageddon 2001 idea at some point that's going to have to. So, well, I guess Michael K. Easton, you are absolutely welcome to come on for that one for sure.
Awesome.
Okay. All right. So we'll get back here to the book. So Act 3 occurs. Okay. We talked about the Green Lantern fight, Hal Jordan versus Mongul. It just gets awesome. Superman shows up. Now, Superman's not like the Superman of old. He's still kind of weak. You know, he's still kind of... He's not got his flight powers back. He's not completely invulnerable. And I'll never forget this. This is one of the craziest sights in this whole book. When Superman understands that he's not going to be able to, you know, fight as like he used to, he goes and gets, like, these huge machine guns. They might have been Toastmasters. I don't know. But
they were Toastmasters, you know they were.
He's standing there like freaking Cable with these guns, and one gun in each hand is bigger than his freaking, you know, bigger than his body practically.
The question is, did he have pouches?
I didn't see any pouches.
Did
he have pouches?
I'm pretty sure like he had like thing around at some point in the book. Maybe it was on his leg or something, but I remember there being pouches somewhere. Because up to this point, you know, this was the resurgence of Superman. We had just been used to, they were doing this weird update. And for like us kids that were reading this, we're like, this is Superman in a black costume because black is cool.
Black is cool.
He doesn't have a cape and he's got machine guns.
And like, where are the freaking pouches?
Yeah.
He does have pouches. I'm looking at it right now. There are pouches on the legs. And I'm going to just give him the benefit of the doubt, and that's ammo that's draped around his shoulders and not like a 1,000 pouch belt on each shoulder, okay? So Superman picks up the guns and they go to war. They're going up against Cyborg Superman, who apparently can manipulate any type of tech. There's a big missile that gets launched. Superboy goes after it, saves Metropolis. There's a weird part where the Eradicator shows up and saves Superman from this kryptonite dust bomb that the Cyborg Superman kind of like lets off in this room. And that somehow leads to Superman getting his powers back. The explanation was kind of lost on me because once the Eradicator does this, which we didn't really talk about the Eradicator's past and what he is. Go ahead.
I think he was siphoning Superman's powers.
That's right. Yes, you're right. You're right. Go ahead.
When Superman died, of course, he was buried, and you come to find out that Eradicator stole his body, and he was in this, like, solar regeneration chamber, and he was slowly healing, and it was... The Eradicator, again, goes back to the pod that Superman came to Earth in. Mm-hmm. There was a storyline where Superman morphed into the Kryptonian, and he was trying to go about, because this version of Krypton, they're all cold and very scientific, and he was going to rebirth Krypton on the planet Earth. Of course, he came to his senses, but this Eradicator was a Kryptonian artifact that had a failsafe. It was basically following that line of, if he falls, then he must carry on the Kryptonian lineage. And he was basically, as Superman was getting better, he was siphoning his powers to use it until Superman was back to full strength.
Okay. So that kind of explains what happens, because the Eradicator's in the same room. He takes a shot from Cyborg Superman, and next thing you know, out of the cloud of Kryptonian dust, Superman looks somewhat disheveled, but he's still alive, comes out and just socks Cyborg Superman hard enough to detach his jaw.
Yep.
So we got Bucktooth Cyborg Superman for the rest of the story. But the way that he kills Hank Henshaw here is just kind of crazy. Because he's got Hank Henshaw, he shoves his fist through his chest. And Hank Henshaw is still sitting there just running his mouth. You wouldn't kill me. And Superman's, well, I don't know. And he proceeds to vibrate his arm so fast that Hank Henshaw is just obliterated to pieces. And I don't think that's the end of Hank Henshaw. I doubt it. But for the purposes of this story, Superman is back. He's defeated the enemy. Mongol, I think, gets his butt handed to him by Green Lantern. Superman grabs his cape, his outfit, and there you go. Superman has returned. And, of course, Lois is so happy. I mean, Lois, let's talk about, I want to talk about Lois here real quick, who just watched her husband die. I don't know what the time frame is in between these books. In our lifetime, it was 1 year where she had to deal with the loss of Clark Kent. Her husband, which I think they were married at this time, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm pretty sure.
I was going to say, I thought they were married. But anyway, Clark's back. Love of her life, and Superman and Lois are back together.
It just blows my mind is, we all, have to go along with the storyline or whatever, but they find, as soon as Superman comes back, they find Clark Kent in the rubble that he was trapped under during this whole time from the fight with Doomsday.
Now, this makes me think that this couldn't be too long after this fight. This fight with Doomsday.
Yeah.
At least I hope. But go ahead. I think I know where you're going.
I can't remember the timeline there. But what was funny was at this point in time of them updating Superman with the mullet, Clark Kent has a ponytail. This is time where ponytails were not in style for men. This was way past that time.
Yeah.
Rocking the gem shooter ponytail.
Oh. But, okay.
And the round glasses.
Yes.
Let's just talk about the likelihood of finding him. The time frame has to be very small. Or if you're going to, 3 months later, Clark Kent is now unburied underneath this. They finally find Clark Kent. Oh, look at that. He's grown a mullet. As he was buried under this skyscraper.
Well, yeah.
There was some kind of weird explanation of how it sounded plausible that he was trapped.
Okay.
I can't remember exactly, but they gave a reason for it, so it was just kind of like, whatever.
Yeah. He definitely looks disheveled. Yeah, the point in which you're talking about is the epilogue of the book, actually, after everything's done and over with. He's got to try and establish his identity again. since he's back. You know, Clark Kent's got to be back also. There's a point where Superman and Clark Kent are in the same place at the same time. You're like, whoa, wait a second. What the heck is going on? Turns out it's Supergirl posing as Clark Kent. More of this Supergirl weirdness that's going on where she can transmorph into other stuff. And this is something that's way outside of my continuity knowledge. I know you know all about it there, Michael, but...
Yeah, she was some kind of transmutator clone mixed with Superman's DNA, because that storyline of where he's in outer space, when he comes back, she had been healing this whole time. She takes on Superman's persona, except for it's more of a black and white costume, and okay. He has to fight with her to make her say, hey, you're this... I think she was called the Matrix for a long time, mm-hmm. And then she became Supergirl again.
Okay. So there's our story, folks. Superman died, and then all of a sudden four Supermen took his place, and then he finally showed back up within a year. He resumed his duties as the iconic DC superhero. So let's go ahead and we'll talk results here. Was there any other notes there, Michael, that you had in regards to you'd like to talk about in regards to the story?
Out of the story, Superboy got his own series. I think ran for over 100 issues. Wow. And still also got his own series. I think his ran for 53 or 55 issues. And still actually became a really strong supporting character in the Superman mythos from there on out. As well did Superboy. He went on to be, of course, he went through various changes, but you know, they all kind of stuck around, and all the people that the characters were created during the series stuck around for a really long time afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
In one version or another.
Did Superboy become a member of Teen Titans? Is that the black? I remember a black T-shirt Superboy.
That happened years later. Jeff Johns retconned a lot of different stuff, and he was the one that actually decided that, you know, Superman or Superboy wasn't a clone of Superman and this professor. He is the clone of Superman and his mortal enemy Lex Luthor.
Okay.
And so, yeah, that was, I want to say, the early 2000s that Superboy was a member of the Teen Titans. And that was when he was wearing basically the T-shirt and blue jeans.
Okay. Okay. The Eradicator, can you recall, does he ever show back up?
Yeah, he actually, there's some, I don't remember as much about him, but I remember that he ends up bonding to a scientist, I think, that was in Star Labs and becomes the Eradicator. And it's still the same character, same costume and everything, except for he doesn't have the shield and his face is all cracked for some reason.
Okay. All right. So let's talk about the finale of the finale here. Ronnie, when you were reading this, you know, way back when you did, I mean, got any opinions, thoughts?
I was just glad to have Superman back.
Was you?
Yeah. I mean, enough's enough with the four different guys and who's who and all that. And I was just really glad to have him back.
Okay. All right. How about you, Michael? What did you think? I mean, the story, after you were done and this story was over with and Superman's hugging Lois Lane, he's back. What were your thoughts at the when you first read it?
Along the same lines, it was good to have him back, mullet and all, and have him in his red undies and all that, and it was nice. But the downside of it was DC going, hey, this really worked for us. How else can we screw up this universe?
Yeah,
so true.
I wasn't a DC guy back in the day. I collected a few DC comics, but I wasn't, you know, that's not been a secret on here. I wasn't for some reason it didn't appeal to me. I will talk about Max Landis's video here where he discusses about how the result of this, and we won't even talk about the comic, you know, the business side of things. But he says, one of the quotes that he says is that what this did was it broke death in comics, at least for a good while. What do you think about that, Michael? Do you think that that's
well,
a valid
it
statement?
Showed with comics, it was always like you could do so much with a character, but there were certain roles you couldn't do. And if you did, they had to be an imaginary story. It couldn't really happen. Mm-hmm. And because of this story being so popular, it was saying, okay, we can take these characters that we don't normally mess with, and we can really screw with them. And as long as they go back to what they were in the end, we can make a lot of money off of this. That's what happened. The short version of it is, you know, Batman broke his back with Bane. Green Lantern turned into a villain, and we had actually one of his replacement, Kyle Rayner, which was a successful Green Lantern, became the new Green Lantern. Over in Green Arrow, he gets blown up in an airplane and gets replaced by his son. So there was always these quick changes that, you know, eventually they were reverted back to the normal status quo. But they could essentially pull the wool over the reader's eyes, and they would go along for the journey because, you know, it was a good story. You know, you wanted to see what would happen. Mm-hmm.
If you want to go back to the to Breaking Death, I mean, you got to go to Phoenix.
Okay.
Jean Grey Jean Grey has died way more than anybody else.
I think he's coming back, actually.
Oh, jeez.
I will. If you're counting, hey, you can't really count it. But if you're counting all new X-Men, at least when I was reading it, that was one way for them to bring her back without actually bringing her back.
And creepy Scott Summers.
Yeah.
She's a teenager, man. Get over it. If you look at that, it really didn't. But in the scope of things, I mean, I say this, but in the scope of things, she was not nearly as important as Superman. Mm-hmm. She wasn't nearly as iconic. She wasn't nearly as beloved. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, Superman's been around, you know, like we said, since the 30s, man. And he is the superhero. Mm-hmm. In a sense, yes. I guess you could say it did break death in comic books. But you go back to, like I said, all these others that have died and come back. I mean, you look at it, and the only ones that really have not come back have been, you know, Uncle Ben. And
that was always the rule of thumb, is you don't bring back Jason Todd Robin or Bucky Barnes. And we all know that doesn't happen.
We just talked in death, or the death in death. Death in the family and death of the family there a couple weeks back. And, we talked a little bit about old Jason Todd there.
The fact that they had a number you can call to see if he lives or dies blows my mind.
I don't know if that's ever been done again. I think we talked about that.
It ends badly.
And that is one thing to point out was, this was what started the world outside of comics to take notice about the world of comics. That was the first time that the death of Superman was on CNN or, you know, whatever, was all over the world. So when stuff started happening, it actually became bigger news, and it just wasn't related to just the comic world.
Can you imagine having the opportunity to, you know, just go back in time and tell your younger self in 1992 how much influence comic books are going to have on pop culture, you know, what we're talking 23 years, 24, 25 years from that point in time? I mean, it was...
It's nuts.
I know, dude. It's something that you cannot even fathom that back then. I never knew that the way our world is right now would be so affected by Superman, Batman. If you could go back and tell yourself, hey, guess what? In 20 years, you're going to get to watch Batman versus Superman on the big screen. You're going to sit there and crap yourself because it's just something that you didn't know. And just like you said, this right here did take it to the mainstream media. You know, we've got people who, when I talk about that lady who at work sent me a message on Facebook, I never talked to this lady, you know, on Facebook hardly ever. I've never sat there and looked at her in her face and talked anything about a comic book in my entire life. At least the time that I've known her. You know, I've never come up to her and said, hey, what about this, this, and this, and this. But at that point in time, back in the 90s, it grabbed so many people's attention. People who were not comic book collectors made a specific point to try and find a specific comic.
It was Beanie Babies, man.
I mean, it was... And the Reign of Superman, we never really talked about how popular it was. It was fairly popular. I mean, people were interested. Superman's coming back, but the speculator was really, really interested in trying to get these issues. And what ended up happening is DC rode this to the bank, where they had put all, you know, they marketed this. Superman's coming back. Speculators are like, oh crap, you know, I'm going to make sure I get this first appearance of whatever, first appearance of this or first appearance of that or whatever, and make sure they have that. So they could put that away for, you know, for many years to come so they can make money. Lo and behold, unfortunately, this, you know, leads to our the speculator market and the comic book bubble busts. A lot of people are unfortunately out.
They're buying 10 copies and realize they've made $10, you know.
Yeah.
Total. They lost money.
Well, and with the speculators, a lot of them didn't realize they were all thinking, looking at old comics, of how valuable they were. Mm-hmm. But those old comics were only printed in the thousands. There was millions and millions of copies printed.
Yes.
That, you know, they're not going to be rare.
That's right.
Leading up to the Return of Superman, there was one other death, and that was the death of Pa Kent.
Yeah, that's true. They never brought him back.
Because that was, during that time, they were trying to say that in the storyline it was a big deal that Superman was dead at the time and met him in heaven or whatever.
The main thing I definitely want to jump off on is the fact that, you know, this story, you know, just like you said, it touched the mainstream media, people become aware of it, and I think that does have it's probably a good story to point to and say, you know, look, people started to notice. People started picking up comics. People started reading comics. I bet you there were a lot of people that weren't reading comics at this point in time that picked up these issues.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
And said, you know, let's go ahead and start reading them. You know, at least a tenth of them probably continued to read. And the other nine are, you know, still trying to pay for their kids' college.
So true.
All right. So, okay. We've kind of reached the end here. I don't think I have anything else, but I mean, I know I sent you guys some questions, and the only one question, and you guys tell me if you were ready for this. If not, we'll totally skip it. We'll just go into plugs and close it out. But Superman fans, not even just Superman fans, but comic book fans have watched the Superman movies.
Mm-hmm.
Ronnie, I think you do a movie podcast.
Sometimes. when we can get it to come, you know,
to happen,
cooperate.
I want you to do me a favor. We'll have you go first, and then we're going to have our illustrious guest go second. But Superman movies, okay?
Yeah.
I want you to do me a favor, and now I put on there rank all of them. So did you do your homework, and did you come up with all of the Superman movies?
I started to, and then I got a little depressed.
Well, here, I tell you what. Give me your top Superman movie. We'll do top... Can you do top five?
All of them together? Like, animated included?
Not animated. I'm just going to go with a live action. We'll do live action. We're talking all the Superman from Superman 1 through 4 up through Returns, Man of Steel. I think that's it. I don't know if there's any other ones in there that I forgot. I think it's just the two extra outside of Superman 1 through 4. So really, there's only six there. Right?
Yeah.
So you get to tell me you get to rank them.
All right. So we're going to do Superman, the first one.
Okay.
Christopher Reeve.
All right.
And then Superman 2, the Donner cut.
Okay.
The Richard Donner cut. Not the other one.
All right.
And then we're going to go Man of Steel.
Okay.
Because no matter what people say, I still liked it.
Okay.
Then we're going to have to go with, I hate to do this, but the one with Richard Pryor.
Richard Superman Pryor! Theory,
where he makes kryptonite out of tar. And then it goes Superman Returns with Brandon Routh and then Quest for Peace.
Quest for Peace rounds out the bottom.
Well, yeah, it's the Quest for Peace.
He fights Nuclear Man.
Nuclear Man. With the fingernails.
All right, Michael K. Easton, follow that up. Let's see if yours matched.
My favorite would be Superman 2, the Donner Cut, which, go back in the history, should have been the original Superman movie. But yeah. So Superman 2, the Donner Cut, then Superman 1, and then Man of Steel. I think that's a great interpretation, modern. You know, I've watched it several times, so I really enjoyed it. And then it's Superman Returns, because I think that is a love letter to the original Superman movies.
Yeah.
So I really enjoyed that. I will say I've never enjoyed the hokey Gene Hackman version of Lex Luthor that Kevin Spacey continued. But, you know, whatever. And then it goes Superman 3, because I feel like they just played that forever on TV repeatedly.
Oh, yeah.
And Superman 4, The Quest for Peace, which, in hindsight, there's a documentary that goes on the guys that did that film on Netflix right now.
Are you talking about the Canon guys?
Yes.
Oh, I just watched it last
week. I gotta watch that.
Electric Boogaloo, right?
Oh, that's so good. Oh, hell yeah.
I've gotta watch that.
I finished it up last night, and I was sending Ronnie pictures. I was like, you wouldn't believe the films that Canon did. And I was like, Missing in Action. And I took a picture of, I said, oh man, they're talking about a good one right now. And I took a picture of Quest for Peace, and I sent it to Ronnie. Oh, yeah.
That's what happened was they did Superman 4 and He-Man, and both movies had these really huge budgets that were cut to a fourth by the time that they got around to making them.
Yeah.
I think.
Well, the project for, I mean, not to get off on a different subject, but the whole project for He-Man was shut down in the middle of the big New York.
Yeah.
Where they got in the middle of where Skeletor's army comes to New York or wherever they were. And they were like, you know what? We're done. And they're like, no, we're not. And he's like, yep. No more money. Sorry.
Dude, the guys that did the Canon films, first off, I mean, they just churned out movie after movie after movie after movie. And Ronnie, I definitely, you know, I know you'll watch it at some point, but
yeah,
some of the stories just cracked me up about, you know, how they, I think Sylvester Stallone, they talk about getting Sylvester Stallone to do Over the Top. Okay, that was a Canon film. That was a Canon film. But anyway, Sylvester Stallone ends up on the set of He-Man, I think. And Sly
looks... Well, I wasn't up picked for this.
No, he looks over at Dolph Lundgren, and I can't remember who he looks at, but he's like, you gave that guy lines?
So, and they don't say this in the documentary, but I believe they were the guys that also had Spider-Man screwed in the rights for Spider-Man for like 20 years.
Dude.
Somehow they got him. And
no, it shows up in the documentary if you watch.
Yeah.
Well, they don't talk about it, but they were talking about how these guys would make a movie poster and basically just sell the poster. Well, as they're flashing the posters there, I noticed throughout the movie there was like two or three posters of Spider-Man. I was like, whoa, wait a second. I didn't know these guys had the rights to Spider-Man at that point.
They tried real hard.
I didn't know.
Yeah.
But I don't know about trying real hard.
Well, somehow they tried. Because it was mixed up with James Cameron, I think, and Canon Films, and, you know, but eventually they got it worked out, I guess.
Let's go ahead and we'll get into plugs here, dude.
We have the Screaming Boy podcast, and we have done 50-some shows, and we've been on hiatus for a while because I will tell you this, life does happen. My co-host Adam actually moved from West Virginia to South Carolina and moved six people in the process of doing this. So he was out, his in-laws, himself, his wife, and his two boys, who are 2 and 3 years old. So he was a little busy. Hmm. And then I actually just recently purchased a home myself. So I've been in the middle of moving, you know, through the months of January and February, just trying to get that done. So that's why we've been on hiatus for a while. You heard it here first. We've done, in December, we did our big Star Wars special with Jason Teasley and Josh Calandros. We have done multiple shows with our good friend Jesse Starcher, and did the whole month of Halloween, which you are usually terrified of scary movies, but we got you on our Halloween specials for somehow.
Straight out of surgery, too, I think.
Yeah, I think that's how we got you. And then we also have, with one Jesse Starcher, The Documentary Diary, which I think about three more are going to drop within the next couple of days.
A lot of fun.
Yeah, this has been a lot of fun. And so we've got a couple more in the can as well, don't we, that need to come out.
Yep.
Are going to be in the can. So we've got the material, we've got the content, and it's coming out very, very soon.
All right, very cool. All right, Michael K. Easton, let's go ahead and have you plug your stuff again. I know you mentioned the podcast earlier. Let's go ahead and plug some stuff there for us.
Okay. Well, we obviously caught the podcasting bug also. Me, Cliff Barnes, Jordan Lowe, and Seth, we've been doing a podcast on SoProComics.com called SoPro Podcast, which has 19 episodes. We are also on hiatus as we redevelop the show. Now that we know what we're doing, so right now we're fighting over what to call the dang thing. but also, Jordan Lowe is starting up a podcast as well with Jeremy. That'll be part of our little network. We got a couple things going on with that. We also at SoProComics.com are working on a couple different books called Bluff Creek and Heroic 9.0. Hopefully people will see the light of day of those books sooner than later. Mm-hmm. As also I have River City Design and Press at rcdap.com. We do graphic design and a little bit of everything. The main things that I do through there is called Me Heroes, where I would draw you and as your favorite character, and you get like a customized print, so you can be Superman or whoever. And we also offer customized comic books, where, you know, right now I'm working on a 4-page book for a woman's husband that's stationed overseas. So we do a lot of things like that as well.
Very cool.
And I think that's all the things in the fire I have going on right now.
If somebody out there listening in podcast land was interested in going to check out some of your work, what's the best place to go to?
They could go to RCDAP. It has a lot of my work on there. There's also, if you want to look more at my art style, it is art.mkeaston.com. So it's art.mkeaston.com.
Okay.
And that has all my comic related art.
Very cool. Well, I want to take a couple seconds here and tell you guys thank you very much for spending, recording time. When this goes up, it's not going to be anywhere near what we got into to talking here. We got close to 3 hours of us discussing this, and it means a lot to me that you two take the time out of your night to sit here and talk about this book and this epic event that occurred. I can't thank you boys enough for coming on here and talking comic books with me. It means a lot to me. Michael, we'll be having you back on here at some point in the future. I have no doubt about that. You know, I know I'm going to be seeing you at the River City Comic Con coming up here in July. July, isn't it? Is it July?
Yep, July 20th. Whatever that Saturday is.
Yep. And Ronnie might be making the trip up, so that'd be pretty cool. But anyway, so again, I want to thank both you boys for coming on here, spending, way more time than absolutely necessary to talk about Superman and the return of Superman. So as for myself, like Ronnie said, we've got the Documentary Diary. You can check out previous episodes of Source Material on the network, in the archives.
And there it is, folks, the return of Superman. I want to thank everybody out there for joining us on this podcast. And again, thanks to Ronnie Adams for coming through, talking comics with me once again. And Michael K. Easton, it was great to have him on here again. Don't forget to give the Rattlitch and Broadcasting Facebook page a like. Upcoming source material shows. The next show we're going to have is actually going to be next Monday, and we're doing it live, folks. We are doing it live. 9:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Rattlitch and Broadcasting Network. You can hear me, Mark Rattlitch, comes back on, the Patriarch Mark Rattlitch comes back onto the show. And first time guest of source material, but he's very well known to the Rattlitch and Broadcasting Network. He's been on other shows. Last time I caught him, he was on The Long Road to Ruin. That is Andrew Graham. Our next show will actually be about Superman Earth 1. Thank you all for joining us. Thanks to Ronnie. Thanks to Michael. We're out of here. Have a good one.